Today I'm speaking with John DeGraff, the executive director of Take Back Your Time and co-founder of the Happiness Initiative. He's produced more than 15 national PBS documentary specials and is the co-author of Affluenza, the All-Consuming Epidemic, and What's the Economy For Anyway? He's taught at Evergreen State College, serves on the board of Earth Island Institute, and is senior well-being advisor for Earth Economics. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, John.
Hey, great to be on your show, Zilly.
Or really welcome back, because I know you've been here speaking about happiness before, haven't you?
Yeah, and I love Santa Fe, so every opportunity I get to come there, I take every advantage of.
Well, hopefully you will be back soon, but in the meantime, tell us about Take Back Your Time. What is this newest project?
Well, it's not my newest project. It's kind of an older project. The Happiness Project is newer, but Take Back Your Time has been going around really since about 2003 when we celebrated our first Take Back Your Time Day. So 10 years ago, on October 24th, and we chose that date because it fell 9 weeks before the end of the year and actually represented the 9 full weeks difference between the amount that Americans work each year on average compared to Europeans. We work about 9 weeks more. So by October 24th, the average European who had worked what Americans work by that time would be taking the rest of the year off. And we were making the point by that we really needed some protections on our time, that Americans were overworked and so forth. And we worked on that issue. We've been working on that issue for the past 10 years around such things as a paid family leave for parents and so forth, paid sick days in cities, and then more recently on the issue of paid vacations.
And what is the status of the bill that was introduced around paid vacations?
Well, in 2009, Congressman Alan Grayson of Florida introduced what was called the Paid Vacation Act. This was a very modest proposal. It would have given workers in American companies a guaranteed 1 to 2 weeks off paid each year, depending on the size of the business that they worked for. Currently, about a quarter to a third of American workers really don't receive any paid time off, and so this would have been, for them, at least some improvement. Still a very modest bill, would have been laughable in virtually every country where people get at least 3 weeks, often 4 or 5 weeks paid by law. But we thought it was a start in the right direction, and it established the idea that people do have a right to some paid time off, and they need it. The bill really went nowhere. In fact, as I and others tried to support it, we were accused of trying to bring down the whole economy. Things were said such as, how can we possibly compete in the global economy if we give people a week or two off, forgetting that everybody we compete with does just that. I was even accused of and the quote was, you're trying to turn America into a 21st century France, as if our goal was to force everybody to appreciate good food and wine. So the bill really languished. It didn't go anywhere. Congressman Grayson lost in 2010, but he won re-election in a landslide last year in 2012. He is back and has reintroduced the bill in Congress. It is still likely not to go far, particularly with the GOP-controlled House of Representatives. So we're beginning to believe that we need to start working on this issue at the state level rather than the national level.
This is also fairly new that we don't have any kind of vacations at all. I mean, you have this great poster from the New York Times in 1920 where President William Howard Taft, conservative Republican, we should say, was saying that everyone should have 3 months vacation. So
right.
What
actually,
happened?
that was a headline story in 1910, actually, in the New York Times, 31st of July, 1910. You can look it up. The title of the New York Times article is How Long Should a Man's Vacation Be? And obviously, there's a gender bias, but in the article, President Taft is referring to men and women. He's referring to everyone. And he says that American workers should get 2 to 3 months, not 1 week, not 2 weeks, 2 to 3 months off, that it would be a good thing for the economy. It would be a good thing for their health, for their families, their connection. And then a number of industrialists and business people are asked what they think of Taft's proposal. And not surprisingly, they think he's a little crazy. But what they think he's crazy about is not the idea, but the idea of 2 or 3 months. And many of them say 1 month wouldn't be such a bad idea. Now, this is 100 years ago.
And so what happened? I mean, what happened in terms of the evolution? Was it the Industrial Revolution? Was it people feeling that more hours equaled more productivity?
Well, I think that's part of it, and people not having much control over their time. You know, where unions have been able to win concessions around things like vacation time, people have gotten better deals, and we have about a quarter of American workers who do very well, who are at international levels when it comes to vacation time. They're either, you know, highly sought after professionals, or they have good unions, or something like that. But the difference between our country and these other countries is that we have no legal protections that apply to everybody around these things. Now, this is true for only four other countries in the entire world. The only five countries that have no law regarding paid vacation time in the world are the United States, Suriname, and Guyana in South America, Nepal, and that paragon of human rights, Burma or Myanmar. That's it. Every other country has at least some law. The average tends to be about 3 weeks. That's very typical. Even the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, which is part of the United States, has a law that requires that workers get 3 weeks off with pay.
So let's talk about why it is really important to have vacations. I mean, not even paid vacations, which of course would be essential, but why is it important for human beings to take breaks like this?
Well, first, let's start with paid vacations, and I would like to see more vacation time available, paid and unpaid. But I think for many of our workers that who are not getting it, they really have to have some basic minimum that's paid, because
right.
They really can't afford to take the time off.
Particularly in this economy, right?
Right, very low wages and so forth, and I think that's understood by other countries. Nonetheless, I would be in favor. Australia, for instance, allows people get a month off, but they can actually take 2 months off at half pay if they want to do it. You know, so instead they
That's
can
so civilized.
And, yeah, they give up a month's pay, of course, but they get that extra month of work. Now, I like that idea. I don't think we're anywhere close to getting anything like that. But vacations matter for many reasons. I think health is really a prominent one. I have a friend, Sarah Speck, who's a very prominent surgeon here in Seattle, where I live, and she calls workplace stress the new tobacco. She says that, you know, if you look at what it does to our arteries and stuff, it's just a lot like smoking, that we are really overburdened by work and by stress. And she laughingly says that when patients come in, they'll tell her about this, and this is just such a common thing that people are facing these kind of illnesses that are essentially driven by stress. And she will say, well, the first thing, take 2 weeks and call me in the morning. You know, not two aspirins, but 2 weeks, because you have to have that break. And then, of course, many of these people can't do it. They have no opportunity. What's the difference? Well, we can see, and Sarah Speck explains this clearly from studies, that people who don't regularly take vacation time are anywhere from half again to a third to half more likely to suffer from heart attacks than people who do take paid vacations. Women, for example, who don't take vacations, paid or unpaid, women who don't take vacations on a regular basis are anywhere from 2 to 8 times more likely to suffer from depression than women who do. This is a long-term study by the Marshfield Clinic in Wisconsin. And there are advantages shown in New Zealand studies, other studies for productivity. There are studies that show that vacations really help in family bonding, that they actually contribute to children doing better in school. Children who take a vacation with their family perform better in school. The evidence is really quite overwhelming that this is a huge net positive for a society to do this, and it's a great prevention of burnout, which in our society, at current estimates, is costing our economy somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 to $400 billion a year, according to a study by Middle Tennessee State.
So the finances should give us some idea of what's happening, but still there's resistance, isn't there?
Absolutely. But if we understand, for example, that when you look at the costs of doing business, you need to look at a range of things because they all play a role, then you will see really that the cost of a little vacation time will be in maybe not this year or the very next year, but we will really start to see this in a big way, that this is cost effective, because what really costs American businesses today and makes our businesses less competitive with the rest of the world is the high cost of health care for businesses and our high cost of health care generally. We Americans are paying twice as much per capita for health care as people in Europe, for example, and in any in almost all other rich countries, and yet we see far worse results. We are arguably the least healthy people in the rich world. We have the shortest life expectancy. We have the worst infant mortality, the worst maternal mortality, the highest obesity, the highest amounts of stress, the highest rates of depression. And all of this costs our economy a huge amount, which then becomes a cost to business for this expanding healthcare system, and then, of course, gets passed on to the consumer. So we all pay for this in a big way. And if we were smart and we thought about things like giving people some breaks and some vacation time, while that might cost a little more in one area, it would save us in, I think, big time in the long run regarding health, and it would improve our health. And that's a very important thing for us to do in this country. We are really the only rich country that is actually seeing some very serious downward trends in life expectancy. Today, in somewhere between 30 and 40 counties in the United States, the life expectancy for women is actually on the decline. That's really unheard of. And that is in large part a function of stress and of some of the things that stress causes. We look at obesity and issues like this, which are obviously also part of what we eat and our lack of exercise and so forth. But they're also a function of stress, and stress actually has ways to make you put on more pounds. It leaves you less time to exercise if you're working too much. So we've got to understand all of this in a very holistic sense. I know Santa Fe is a holistic place, so I'm sure you folks there kind of get that concept. But as a nation, we don't get that concept.
You know, a lot of people do these comparisons with Europe, and they seem obvious with this, but other people would say, well, that's why so many of these economies are struggling right now, because of how many social services they provide. So what is the truth around that?
Well, let's look at the facts here. If we look at the European countries who have, they all have vacation time, so that's not an issue, but if we look at the social services and the other things, what we find is that the European economies that have the best social contracts, social service programs, the highest rates of equality, the shortest working hours, are all the countries that are doing the very best. Their economies are not in trouble. They're being asked to pay for the economies that are in trouble. So if you look at Scandinavia, for example, or the Netherlands or Germany, these economies are doing absolutely as well, even in traditional terms, as the American economy, and I would argue much better in terms of actually serving people's needs. But they don't have unemployment rates that are higher than ours. They have better savings rates by far. They have far lower debt. Their economies that are strong. The economies that are doing badly in Europe, it's very clear, are exactly the economies that followed the American model, where people work the most. Greece, for example, Spain, where they have deregulated and privatized large sections of their economy, cut taxes sharply, and so forth. So you look at Greece, you look at Spain, you look at Italy, countries also where a certain amount of corruption has played a role. You look at Portugal, you look at Ireland, you look at Iceland. The very countries that followed the American model, deregulated their banks, allowed immense housing speculation, and cut back sharply their social programs, are the countries that are doing badly in Europe and have also seen a huge decline in well-being or happiness in the last 5 years. And the issue in Europe is whether the countries doing well who didn't follow the American model are going to be asked to pick up the tab for the ones that did.
Which will send all of them down.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, I think that's more complicated how much.
Yeah.
I don't think the austerity program pushed by Germany and stuff is particularly working well, but nonetheless, the issues in Europe have absolutely nothing to do with the amount of vacation time, which actually makes European workers more productive.
And probably healthier. Now, in some of these other...
healthier. Then on that end, there's simply no question.
Right.
And that's true even of the European countries that are not doing well. I mean, even the Spanish and the Greeks and so forth live at least 2 or 3 years longer than we do. Their health is better.
Now, you had mentioned when you were talking about health that women's life expectancy are going down. Do you think that this is a factor of more women entering the workforce, or is there something more strain? What is...
Well, I think it's a combination of things. The biggest single factor behind this is vastly increasing inequality. And so what we're seeing a lot of this is among poor women in poor, mostly, gotta break it to the audience, mostly red states who have not supported people. And so we see one of the trends here that we see in the United States is that the poorest, the states that have the greatest amount of inequality in the United States, which tend to be southern and Appalachian states and so forth, and to some degree New Mexico also, also have by far the poorest health, and they have the lowest scores when Gallup measures life satisfaction. On the other hand, the countries that have the best social programs, the strongest safety net, the most equality, the best deals for people in terms of having vacation time, also have the longest lifespan, best health. They have the highest life satisfaction. And so you can look at this and you can chart this, and it's very clear. The least happy states in America, for example, according to Gallup, are in this order. The worst is West Virginia, then Kentucky and Mississippi. These also are the three states in the United States with the worst health scores, and they are among the 10 most unequal states in the United States. If you look, on the other hand, at the happiest states as measured by Gallup, you get Hawaii, Colorado, and Minnesota, all three of which are characterized by a high degree of equality, and all three are also the three healthiest states in the United States with the longest life expectancy.
So for anybody planning on moving, for example, away from New Mexico to avoid the drought, right, consider Hawaii, Minnesota.
well, yeah, and Hawaii is good, but a lot of people will then, of course, try to write that off due to the weather or something like that, but you can't do that with Minnesota.
Right. You know, one of the factors that I really liked is that you were talking about the idea of paid vacations. Well, I didn't really like is impacting national parks. But you have this quote from John Muir in 1876 calling for a law of rest. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. John Muir is the father, of course, of our national park system. And he was the first American, so far as we know, at least where we have a public record, who called for a paid vacation law. And he did that in 1876. He called it the Centennial Freedom Act. This was the centennial of the Declaration of Independence. Or the law of rest. And Muir said that all Americans, regardless of race, gender, class, et cetera, should get 2 weeks off paid. Not 3 months like Taft, but 2 weeks, so that they would have the chance to restore themselves, and particularly in Muir's view, go out and appreciate nature, which he thought was essential for restoration for all of us. Now, Muir used these words. He said, "We work too much and we rest too little." And in the article, he calls on businessmen. He says, "Yo, you, Mr. Businessman," he says, "you cannot leave your business. Well, you will leave it. killed by overwork, you will end up in the hearse of the Jolly Undertaker. And then Muir goes on to say compulsory education is a good thing. Compulsory recreation might be even better. So this is from, Muir really felt that people ought to get out into nature. And I think when we see, when we talk to people in our national parks today, I mean, there's a lot of people visiting national parks. That's not a problem, that there are not enough people. But their stays are so short, they're not really restorative. So that today, just a generation ago, the average length of a visit to Yosemite National Park was 48 hours, and 80% of people who visited the park stayed overnight. Today, the average length of a vacation, of a trip to Yosemite National Park is 5 hours, and only 20% of visitors stay overnight. Visits to the Grand Canyon are even shorter. You just come, you kind of look and go, oh, and move on to the next must-see destination. This is not a good thing for us.
And it's also, this is a big factor in general happiness and well-being, right? I mean, they talk about access to nature, environment, getting out. And this also is part of the family bonding part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, it's all, that's the point, is that these things are really all connected. And I'm working on a film right now for public television about why we need vacation time in America. And it was just basically wonderful to go in a campground in Yosemite and talk with these families who come from places like Los Angeles and other things, and who were talking about what this meant to their children. You know, I had a fellow say to me, as we were coming up here from L.A., the kids kept saying over and over again, "Dad, we get to see the stars tonight." Mm-hmm. And for them, that was a big thing, you know. And, I mean, he was kind of almost teary-eyed when he was telling me this about his kids. And you could see what it meant to these kids to actually have this access. Because one thing we know now, and it's not all because of lack of vacation, I don't want to claim that, but I mean, a lot of it's because of video games and everything else, but one thing we see is that children today are spending far less than half as much unstructured time outdoors as they were a generation ago. In fact, the average American kid today is only spending 30 minutes in such activity a week.
I was going to say, this family is fortunate to have kids who are that excited to go and see the stars instead of being separated from their Nintendo or whatever it is.
That family we talked to made it a point that if they brought any of those things, they really extremely limited them for the kids while they were there.
Well, which also brings us to the point that, are we ever really disconnected now with this technological society that, you know, where we can barely be away from our iPhones, our computers? Do people ever really go on vacation anymore?
Well, I think some do, but it is true that about 70% of people nowadays stay that they stay connected to the office while they're at work, if they work in an office. It's somewhat less true for factory workers, and obviously people like that, of course, they don't tend to do that as much. But we are very connected. I talked to a fellow in Yosemite who said, you know, he says, you know, he couldn't, it's really hard to kind of get away from the gadget, even when you don't bring it. He said, I keep getting the phantom ring. I keep hearing my cell phone ringing, even though I don't have it with me. He said, it's kind of sad, you know, that we're so...
I sense therapy is needed.
Our rhythms have caught up with this. And, I mean, I think we all do it to some degree. And I'm not one of those people who says you can never look at an email while you're traveling or anything. I mean, I think what I'm about is balance in everything. And a little, sometimes, to take a few minutes and check something like this to make sure there are no emergencies, it makes you feel a little more comfortable. But you really need to be careful and to limit it and to not get addicted. And that, I think, is the tricky thing in our society. And certainly, employers need to know that it is not doing them any good to require this kind of electronic leash with their employees. There's a great study done. There's a book called Sleeping with Your Smartphone that looks at this and an article called "Why Making Paid Time Off Predictable and Required." This is from the Harvard School of Business. It's a long survey of a big Boston company in which workers were split into two groups. And one of the groups worked long hours. When they were on vacation or during the weekends, they were tethered to their phones. They had to have, you know, their phones. They had to check the emails on occasion. The second group was really limited to a 40-hour work week, kicked out of the office basically at 5:30 in the evening, told not to check their phones, not to use email, would only be available by phone in case of a truly serious emergency, take all their vacation time, and so forth. At the end of this study, the Harvard Business Review discovered that in every single measurement of success, the workers who were not working the long hours, who were not attached to the electronic leash, did better. They were more satisfied with their jobs, they had less turnover, they had better work-life balance, they had better health, and they actually were more productive. So the evidence here is very clear, and we just refuse to see it.
We really do. There are also the logistical aspects. I mean, this Sunday in the business section of the Times, people were writing about the workplace strain. When one employee gets to vacation and others have to cover the shift, and the structure hasn't really been established to support that leave. So it just puts more strain on others who may be left resentful. And how do you, what would you advise to people who are trying to negotiate this with their own businesses?
Well, couple things we need to do. I mean, the Europeans cross-train people because they know that that issue is going to come up. We also have to hire enough people. I mean, we need to, one of the things I think we need to do as a society anyway is deal with unemployment by sharing work a little bit, reducing hours somewhat, and hiring more people to do the jobs. Now, you know, that's harder clearly for small businesses and tiny firms, and in this case, I think we have to probably build in some incentives. We have to figure some ways to give them time to adjust to these changes, but we need to start moving in that direction, not completely ignoring the possibility, but we need to prepare folks. And another thing that we can do, I mean, it used to be, for instance, before the world of 24/7 and everything always open and stuff, when I grew up, that restaurants or small businesses, shops and things, would take a couple of weeks off at a time. They just closed their doors, and all the employees would get that time off and be that time together. I mean, Boeing here in Seattle still does that a couple of weeks a year. You know, they just shut down. And in some ways, that's a more efficient way to do this.
Well, that would be much more ideal, right? People wouldn't fear losing their jobs. They wouldn't fear the kind of choice, the ego attachment of, you know, the entire company will fail if I go on vacation.
Exactly. They'll know when it's going to be. And if I have a wonderful Thai restaurant in my neighborhood near where I work. It's just the greatest place. I love it. I go there, you know, once a week and things like that. And you know, for 2 weeks, sometime during the summer, I don't even remember, you know, I think it's probably the same time each summer, but that I can't even say. But for 2 weeks each summer, I come in, there's a sign on the door saying, "We are closed for vacation. We will open because aren't we want to give our employees some time off, and we will be back open on." And these are family businesses where people are, you know, open 7 to 8. And some people will complain, "Oh my God, Bontai's not open this week." And I'll say, "Yes, but this is actually a great thing. You can hold off for 2 weeks. Give those people this opportunity. That restaurant is doing exactly the right thing, and it's exactly what every other restaurant ought to do."
You have some kind of indications of how people may want to bring it up with their job, you know, if you're negotiating a new contract, or really to work with your employer and with other employees to talk about establishing that as a business. I mean, should people bring this up, again, given this fragile economy?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, again, you know, workers have different degrees of power and strength, depending on their skills, depending on how much their employee needs them, employer needs them. So some people obviously have far more negotiating opportunities
right
than others. And for the poorest, least skilled workers, workers who may not have the educational credentials, not necessarily through fault of their own. I mean, inequality in this country, the soaring costs of college, all of those things have made it difficult for many folks in that regard. So I am sympathetic to them, but in all honesty, they have very little power. And they really need two things. I think they need unions. And secondly, I think they need government. I think they need laws and regulations. But there are many workers who are highly trained, skilled professionals who really do negotiate their hours of pay, their contracts, and so forth. And those people should be thinking about the importance of balance in their life and what vacation can do for them and for their health and for their families. And they should be saying to their employee, no, I'd rather have a little bit more time off than necessarily more money. People tend to believe in this country that more money will always make them happier, and they often don't realize that, in fact, more time will make them happier. So an interesting example of this is a case in California, in a place called Amador County, where the county in 2009 reduced the work week to 4 days, 4 9-hour days, and 36 hours, and then cut salaries by 10% in order to improve the budget. Now, these were conservative Republican county supervisors. I'm, as you might guess, not a conservative Republican, but I think these county supervisors did exactly the right thing. They didn't want to lay people off. They wanted to share the pain and so forth, or what they thought would be pain, and they reduced the work week and the pay. Now, the first reaction of the workers and the union, sadly, to this was to scream bloody murder and say, you can't do this, we can't possibly survive with 10% less, et cetera, et cetera. But the county said, no, we're going to do this because we don't want to lay people off. 2 years later, the county gave the workers the right to vote on whether they wanted to stay at a four-day week with less pay or go back to a five-day week with full pay. And the workers voted 71 to 29% to stay on the four-day work week with less pay.
I
talked to those workers, and they said they learned something in that those 2 years. They learned that they could get by with a little less money, but that this extra day off meant the world to them. It helped them with their families. Moms would say, oh, I ran errands when my kids were in school on Fridays so the family could spend the whole weekend together. So, not all of them liked it, particularly often single men who wanted to make more money were not happy with the vote.
But overall,
71 to 29 is a good... That says right. something, I think. And it tells us that when people actually get a chance to experience free time, they like it. It's precisely for that reason that you have far more protests in Europe where people are getting 4 weeks off to get more vacation than you have in the United States where people get nothing, by law. Denmark had a general strike, basically, to go from 5 weeks to six because people there, having the experience of free time, understand the value of it.
I would love to see that happen in America. John DeGraff, thank you so much for being with us today. And the organization is Take Back Your Time. People start talking about vacations, especially now with July 4th around the corner. Take some time off, relax. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll be speaking with Peter Simonson, Executive Director of the ACLU, and also Rose Griego and Kim Keel, who have a legal case against the state. Thank you very much.